Prosseguo. Eu really thank Mahmoud Tazari and the Council Minister Kamal hand over to them to make presentation on the proposed amendments to the bill. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair and members, for inviting us, and thank you for taking us earlier as well. Chair, I think we just wanted to make a submission on the bill, I mean, on the poppy bill, and let me say up front that we think this is a very positive and an answer to the bill. We're certainly protecting personal information for critical items in our democracy. Up to now, the fact that we don't have to do it has meant a lot of things. I think just to introduce our delegation, my name is Ismail Momonya, call me Momo. I'm responsible for tax and financial technology in the Treasury. This is Janine Pinner-Giu. It's responsible, one of our legal eagles, responsible for financial sector regulation and legislation. And then we have our colleagues from our non-banking financial services regulator, the Financial Services Board, Uncle Shombi and Anna Manganye, who are joining us. Chair, I think we don't want to waste your time of the committee too much, but maybe just by way of background, I think what we wanted to explain is in regulating personal protection of personal information, that we just wanted to bring to your attention some of the concepts of the impact on some of the financial regulators, which clearly are not intended, and we've been having lots of discussions with officials in the Department of Justice. I don't see them here. Oh, good. And we work very cooperatively. We might have differences sometimes, and as you know, the nature of legal interpretations always comes in. But basically, just to give you a background, after the global financial crisis in 2008, G20 and other countries have really begun to take very tough steps to regulate and supervise the financial sector more intrusively, because in a way, we almost think that it's got benefits, it's like a nuclear bomb, but if you don't regulate it effectively, you can have an explosion which can destroy all the good that you had. And the approach is no longer one of light touch regulation. So it really is now one of the heaviest regulated sectors in the economy. And internationally, what you see, don't get that before, you have Basel III, right. You've got Basel III for banks, you've got Solvency II, regulating derivatives, we're regulating ratings agencies, you name it, anything that moves, we're regulating it in the financial sector. And there's lots of international standards that have developed. For example, we go through what's called the FSEP review once every 5 years, conducted by the IMF and World Bank. And on top of that, there are peer reviews that are undertaken to make sure that as a country we adhere to the banking standards, insurance standards, security standards. Now, and in fact, currently South Africa is undergoing a peer review. The Minister of Finance has announced in last year's budget a shift towards what we call Twin Peaks regulation. At the moment, you've had many different regulators, but what Twin Peaks refers to is that there'll be one regulator being the South African Reserve Bank to deal with the financial soundness of institutions, what we call microprudential supervision, and the second one to deal with consumer protection and market conduct. And the FSB, in fact, will be phased out, and there will be a new market conduct and consumer protection for financial services regulator. That's not the name, but that's what we're working towards, and we'll be legislating that hopefully next year. The Reserve Bank will also oversee the entire financial stability of the financial system, because what the financial crisis showed is that if one institution goes, and I'll come to that just now, and it's systemically important, it can knock the entire country out, the entire financial system, the entire economy, which is what you saw with the Lehman crisis in 2008. And even now, I think we've recognized when we shifted to Twin Peaks, that market conduct and consumer protection in a financial service really needs higher standards than a normal Consumer Protection Act. Because it's not like selling a vacuum machine. You take it, it doesn't work, after a few months you bring it back, there's a warranty, etc. A financial services product, like a pension policy, could be something that might take 8 years. You know, whilst you're contributing, you want to know it's okay, the 4 years you work, and then you have another 4 years after you retire, you want to make sure you get payment right up to the day you die, and that your spouse also gets it after you. We've moved on issues like unsecured credit and share. We want to come back to this committee at some point on the whole approach to garnishee orders, where there are weaknesses, if the system's really been abused, we've dealt with issues of fees, etc. So this is just by way of background. I think what it all does, it does raise a lot of questions for us, so you can see where we're coming from. That the financial sector is probably more integrated globally than any other sector. Our banks here are connected to other banks overseas, including in Africa, in the US, etc. But the problem is, they are all regulated nationally. And that's why you need international standards and international coordination between national regulators. So as a matter of course, if you're regulating Barclays or EFSA, you've got to talk to the regulator in the UK who deals with Barclays. Some of these institutions are now called SIFIs, and I've said this joke a million times, it's not what you think it is, but it's called systemically important financial institutions. You have global SIFIs, you have domestic SIFIs, and they basically refer to these big institutions that if one is unhealthy and becomes bankrupt or insolvent, the entire, all the other banks would crash because they are so interconnected. And so one of the big lessons out of the financial crisis is the need for international coordination and sharing of information between regulators, say, in South Africa and regulators in other countries. But there were breakdowns that were identified. And sharing of information is quite critical. And I should add that it's not just between, say, two different country regulators that you have to share information. We find that even within the country, the regulators have a habit of not sharing information. You can look at the study in the UK between the Bank of England and the Financial Services Authority, but we shouldn't just be throwing stones at the UK. We certainly share, I think, the same features, okay? That people work in silos, they don't share information. And so if you look at our companies could deal with medical aid, they could deal with insurance, they could deal with banking. We need to get all the different regulators to work together. And I think that this really gets to the key issue that we want to raise, which is not addressing this bill nor in any other bill, which is in every sector we have a regulator. You have one for banking, for non-banking, there's a credit regulator, we deal with money laundering, there's a competition regulator, consumer protection, now we have information, there's medical schemes. And the big question that we have to answer is, who's the lead regulator? Are they all equal? And if there are conflicts between them, how do they actually deal with these deadlocks conflicts? We also have the additional problem in South Africa that a lot of our institutions operate in other countries on our continent here in Africa. And the problem is a lot of those regulators face capacity challenges. And if they're not able to regulate our banks when they operate in country X, then it makes it difficult then the U.S. regulators may find that standards are too low and there are punitive measures. So that, by the way, is our background. I think just with regard to this bill, of course, the question can be asked. I mean, all bills go through cabinet, so we obviously inputted them, but that was a long time ago. There's a lot that's happened. There's been amendments. We still need to deal with it. We've also talked to, and we've been engaging with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and the Law Reform Commission. I'm not saying I did it. This bill, I know, is so long in the making. There were different people dealing with it. We've made submissions to the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development. A lot of our concerns were taken into account. But I think as in a rush towards the end, when the bill got finalized, we still felt that there were some outstanding issues, in particular clauses 38 and 72. And that's what we've come to discuss today. I think we have no doubt that given the complexity of this bill, that, you know, sometimes you only realize the impact once the bill is there. And I do wonder whether some of the other regulators have taken into account the impact of this bill, which is something that we have to take into account. But I think fortunately the bill does at the end say that it will take a year or longer to implement particular provisions in the bill. And I think that extra time that we will have will actually force people, it's like the Companies Act, once it's out, you now need to adjust to the new playing field and you start re-looking at the clauses that were there. It's often not possible to anticipate everything right up front. So, Chair, I think the FSB has also been with us and concerned. I won't deal with what they deal with. I said they deal with the non-banking sector. We can move on. And obviously they enforce compliance with the regulatory laws and try and deal with soundness of non-banking financial institutions. Move on. So, Chair, let me get to the two issues that are of concern then. And we are talking to our colleagues. I'm not saying we don't have agreement as yet, because I think on one hand they do say sometimes that perhaps we are reading too much and perhaps the protection is already there. But I think we obviously require certainty for our regulators when they act so that they're not seen to be liable for some of their actions. I think the first one relates to, and maybe I should ask Janine just to come in, do you want to just explain the changes we want with regard to relevant function and the impact on financial regulators, which is of concern, and our proposed change, which we'd like you to consider.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The first particular clause that we are making submissions in respect of is Clause 38, Subclause 2, and indicated there is the current wording of that subclause. And it provides for the definition of relevant function. And currently the way it is worded that is that a relevant function that would be afforded some protection and exemption in terms of Clause 38 would be a function that's performed by a public body and which the Financial Services Board, for example, would fall under the definition of public body, which is performed with a view to protect members of the public against financial loss due to dishonesty, malpractice, or other misconduct or improper conduct and dishonesty. So that is relating particularly to a specific function of the Financial Services Board, which is protection of members of the public. Now, the concern which has been expressed, which we would express, is in relation to the ambit of the functions that would fall within Clause 38, Subsection 2, is somewhat too narrow, and that it's important to note that the functions that are performed by the Financial Services Board and other regulators don't strictly always only deal with protection of members of the public. They also, as has been noted, also relate to the protection of the stability and integrity of financial institutions and financial markets in general and such important functions that relate to the overall importance to the economy. And so what we would propose, which we show in this slide, is a slight addition to the existing wording, which would also capture within the scope of Clause 38, Subclause 2, to provide additional wording which is indicated in point 2 at the bottom, protecting the integrity, stability, or soundness of financial institutions or markets. So it would just slightly broaden the scope of the Subclause 2 so that then it would more appropriately encompass the end of appropriate activities and functions that regulators such as the Financial Services Board perform in the performance of their mandate in terms of their legislation. So we just propose that minor amendment there. So that's the first important provision.
Let me say, we're not saying this is the only way to solve the concern we have. We're just putting a possible solution. Obviously, you have all the right to amend it and tell us we're talking nonsense or amend it in the way you like. So it's just a proposal that you're putting as one way to deal with it.
The second important clause that we would make submission in respect of is Clause 72 subclause 3A, which provides for a definition of accountable. And the current wording is indicated on the screen there, and it basically provides that currently that a responsible party, such as a regulator, would be regarded as having processed information if they enter into a memorandum of understanding with another regulator in another country, and the other regulator in the other country processes information in a manner that compromises the protection of the data subject and would be a contravention of this act. And so the current definition of accountable would effectively deem the regulator or the responsible party to be effectively liable in terms of the bill for that improper processing of the data, the information of the data subject. And so that could leave regulators such as the Financial Services Board who are dealing and exchanging information with other regulators in other countries in terms of memoranda of understanding open to liability in terms of the legislation, which could have a significant impact on them and on their ability to engage in the exchange of information, which is very important for their mandate and function.
I mean, this is, as Janine said, is very critical. Regulators in South Africa are exchanging information with regulators in the UK because our banks may be there, our insurance companies will be there. Often they are even primarily listed there, like in the case of Barclays as a controlling company or in the case of Old Mutual. But in those cases, often it is binding because the laws, the regulatory agencies are quite developed. When you look at our companies, financial institutions that are on our continent and in other countries, often because of the capacity issues, the MOUs may not be binding in terms of their legislation. Yet they do have to share information. So how do we deal with this info? And the info would be with regard to particular clients who could pose risk or there would be some issues. And so I think what we're saying is that as long as you are satisfied with some minimum standards, right, but maybe get to the solution, this exchange of info should definitely be allowed. Otherwise, I think they're not going to be able to function as regulators.
So what we would propose as a potential revision of this definition of accountable would be an addition at the end of the definition that would sort of provide a proviso. It would provide that the responsible party would be deemed as having processed that information and as potentially having violated the legislation unless it has satisfied certain requirements which are set out in the additional wording that we are proposing. So there would be two key aspects to the requirements. The first would be that the memorandum of understanding that would have been entered into between the regulator and the regulator in other countries must, its provisions contain protection measures that are consistent with the protection measures that are included in the bill, so that there would be some effort, definite effort and emphasis on ensuring that those principles are adhered to and applied in the application of that memorandum of understanding and exchange of information in terms of that memorandum of understanding. So there would have to be an appropriate framework put in place between the parties before a regulator here, in terms of the agreement, could exchange information with the other regulator. So that's the first important requirement. And then the second important requirement is that the responsible party, the regulator in South Africa, would have to immediately inform the regulator about if there is any instance where there may be interference with the privacy of a data subject because the other party to the memorandum of understanding has for some reason processed information not in accordance with the principles contained in the bill and in the memorandum of understanding. They would have to inform the regulator and advise the regulator of steps that they had already taken to adhere to the requirements for privacy protection set out in the Memorandum of Understanding and the bill. And afterwards, the information regulator could indicate what steps must further be taken by the responsible party, who is the regulator in South Africa, to restrict the further exchange of information or other measures to protect privacy and prevent future irregularities and interference with the privacy of data subjects. So then the information regulator would have a role in assisting to ensure that there wouldn't be further ongoing interference with the privacy of data subjects and to try to minimize the impacts of any such interference that may have already occurred. So it's sought to place definite obligations on the responsible party, the responsible regulator in South Africa, so that there are definite steps that they would need to take, and only if the regulator in South Africa complied with all of those steps and fulfilled all of these obligations as set out in these proposed requirements, would they then be considered to have fulfilled their responsibility as being accountable and would be afforded the protections set out in Clause 72. So we would propose this is an appropriate balance between the need of the regulator to, the information regulator to ensure the protection of information and the ability of regulators in South Africa to exchange information in terms of memoranda of understanding and other international agreements.
Thanks, Janine. So this is one way to resolve this issue, Chair. I mean, again, it's not necessarily the only way, but the way that we're suggesting. I won't go through the rest of it because I think it just explains it. I don't think Uncle Anna want to say anything because I want to make sure there's no fruitless expenditure if they don't talk here.
Thank you, Chair. Just one little clarification, which may or may not have been obvious. Currently, the provisions do allow the exchange of information between a South African regulator like FSB and foreign regulator. However, the import of the definition of what constitutes accountability by the South African regulator, which accountability, by the way, is accepted. It is clear that the South African regulator that shares information with foreign regulator must remain accountable. That must be accepted. But the import of the definition of what that accountability means is that when the foreign regulator processes information in a manner that is in breach of the statutory provisions that protect the data subject, the privacy of the data subject, that action by the foreign regulator is deemed to have happened within the Republic and it is deemed to have been done by the responsible regulator that shared information with the foreign regulator. Now that causes the difficulty that it will then cause serious restrictions and it will impede the ability of the South African regulator to share information with foreign regulators in breach of all the bilateral agreements that are entered into by the country and therefore by the FSB or any other regulator that is in the similar space with other foreign regulators for purposes of sharing information in financial services space. Now, the proposed wording, what it proposes is to say, let us find an attempt to get accountability to be accountability and not to cause some form of liability on the part of the South African regulator. Within the bill, however, there is a provision which provides that when you, as the South African regulator, you are faced with an action, a court action, as having breached the provision, you can raise a defense that will say you shared the information with a foreign regulator. This still does not fully address the difficulty because we operate in a highly litigious environment, in an environment which I don't want to start quoting cases because I might end up, you know, breaching certain rules of law. But the environment in the financial services industry is extremely litigious and it's extremely mischievous. What we will find ourselves with is a situation where the South African regulator is taken into litigation on an ongoing basis. Yes, there will be this defense, but the defense is not an exoneration. All it is just a defense which may or may not be accepted by whatever the judicial authority is at that point in time. If the judicial authority is the information regulator, or is actually a court of law. But the truth of the matter is that this will unstring, it will simply arrest the process, it will find the process in court all the time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to also add on Section 38, the motivation why, as it reads currently, it will impact on the regulators, and particularly the SFB. And I think basically what we're saying there is that when you look at Section 38, one of the provisions of the bill is that if before you process information as a responsible party like a regulator, for instance, you need to seek consent from the data subject. And like as Nongwe said, we operate in a very litigious environment where you will find maybe we need to exchange information because we need to establish whether the company complies with the regulation in a foreign country. So basically, we won't be able to comply with that because it will be difficult for us to seek or to obtain consent from a data subject that you eventually want either to investigate or to impose a sanction on. And we are saying Section 38 is too restrictive for us. Some of the functions that we perform as a regulator, it's not only to protect the members of the public. We've got other functions, for instance, to make sure that there is to protect the financial system. We've got to protect the financial soundness of the financial institutions that we regulate. Section 38, as it is currently, we can only be exempt from seeking consent from a data subject if and only if we want to protect the members of the public. So we can only process information without having sought consent because we want to protect the members of the public. Hence, we are saying we will not be able to process information if that information is required for other functions of the SSB. As we are saying, we need to expand it to include the financial stability and the financial soundness functions that are performed by the SSB.
And that's it on our part. I mean, we are engaging with our friends at the back, officials that continue to do so. We thought we'd just bring this to your attention because we weren't sure what your timelines were at the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Miller, in the engagement, Commissioner Honourable Bloom, Honourable Zuga.
Chairperson, the issue of sharing information, Ms. Mangani clarified when explaining. What I'm going to ask is that since you have already observed the capacity problem, what do you have now in place in order to eliminate that problem of capacity? You are still South African Reserve Bank is given mandate to oversee financial stability in the entire system. Can you give me a bit of clarity so that an layman like yourself will understand? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. No, Chair, there is some other questions in the bill itself. I just want clarity from you. When are we supposed to finish this bill? Because I see there are a lot of amendments from the National Assembly side. When are we going to go into the bill? That's my question.
Yes, it will not be now, Honorable Bloom, in the next part. The first quarter of next.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to get to one point. The example made, or the specific link from the speaker was particularly national credit and international information dealing companies, or the financial sectors in particular, where personal information is shared, you know, between companies and clients, international head offices abroad. My question is that we are dealing, what's coming up now very soon is the protection of state information, that is before the NCOP. Now, we are government employees and government departments coming before us talking about personal information. Now, if they work for the government, or they represent the government, or represent us in the government department, my question to them is, how would this bill impact on, or what do they foresee that they have to deal with in terms of what's currently under discussion in the protection of state information? My question is, if the protection of state information bill is dealt with, are we not in a sense preempting or opening ourselves to the fact that we have to re-engage on what is coming out of state information, because you are dealing not just clients but the state policy that regulates these personal information.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation. I think it takes us a long way if you understand what has been happening. Presently, South Africans were very vulnerable. South African companies internationally were very vulnerable because nothing prospered there. That is one specific aspect, and that's the reason why I want to welcome this. I have, I think, taking it forward from what Honorable Joseph is saying. You see, the Protection of State Information Bill only deals with state information that is there within the state. And that should be my understanding. And I think this bill trying to clarify, it also makes sure that the other information that is outside the state is protected. Is that what you're telling us? Because it's important information not in the state. You see? But information like my banking details, all those things are not within the state. Is that what we're trying to clarify, that information? But in terms of me, if that is the situation, we'll welcome this and we'll agree that we... Because, you see, regulators might want to protect, and that's why my fear is, might want to protect instruments. We are going to discuss it. I'm just saying I'm welcoming it.
Okay.
You see, it's good, you must listen. If that is the situation, you see, because there are institutions that is not the state. I mean, a lot of surveillance have been formed. People have brought, government have brought, parents in the morning, since they left, they lost a lot of money. You know, because this protection was not there. And sometimes it's happening. I mean, there are a lot of companies calling you from the UK now, telling you that you have learned not to what you must do and prove it. Because if you agree to give them that information, your money is gone. Nobody protects you. Yes. Nobody protects you. And then a lot of our own companies locally here. But I'm not talking about like people who are brought or even locally here. Because that information is not protected. And if that is the understanding that this thing is trying to bring to us, I, I, want to welcome it, but that's the point I wanted to raise. But just clarify it further for us, so that we understand it. But you see, whenever somebody else would want to give those institutions a new way to, because you see, my understanding is these people are held accountable. And you see, this is what the bill wants to bring to us. So that they don't have the opportunity that even if they've given somebody else that particular information and not, did not make sure that they've protected that particular situation, you know? And this is what the bill says, this new amendment that are coming in are trying to tell us, you see. If that is the situation, because it's a present. People might give information to somebody else out there, and then other things have innocence. Now, if these amendments are saying no, you can't be innocent because you are responsible to protect that information. If that's what amendments are saying, just clarify it for the fall. Therefore, then we welcome that. Thank you, Chair.
According to the presentation,
I think it's well understood. But I want to check about this protection of personal information. Then, for example, somebody claiming to be, let's say, working for FMB, let's say my bank is FMB, but trying to sell a product, to say, no, here we have got 1, 2, 3 and the like. And also want to put my particulars, just to check my particulars. For example, this is people from RICA saying that now, in fact, you have won something. And when we check out RICA, is that now, in fact, it's the one, according to the state, that we have to do, to, let's say, to make sure that now our information coming to them from and the like are up to date. And it's one way of, let's say, collecting crime and the like. Is it possible for one, let's say, to be followed by the persons working, let's say, for RICA to say maybe your cell number is 1,000 in the lab. Is that possible? Thank you.
You can respond.
I'm not going to go into the detail of the last questions. I think Henk and Ananda are best placed to answer what they're seeking to do. But from my understanding, what they're seeking to do is a lot of institutions...
Just a moment. Go on, Matilda. You're not listening, and then you'll come again and ask us.
Whether it's cell phone companies, financial institutions, have personal data. And what this bill does, it regulates how they can use it, whether they can sell it and give it to someone to send you products, or people phoning you, etc. But they are, I think, best placed to deal with the overall objective. And I think it's a very important objective because clearly this area hasn't been regulated. People get hold of your numbers. You get calls all the time. I think with regard to issues like some of them are scams. So I don't think this bill will solve all problems because those who are crooked who tell you you've won £50,000 or this or that, I'm not even sure they're really from overseas. It's all anonymous emails and so on. I think that's a crime problem. You've got to get various authorities to work. You need education. You need all of those. But hopefully they'll reduce the incidence of that because people won't be able to get hold of databases as easily as they can currently. But I have no doubt that criminals will still find ways around these things. But to come back then, so I won't answer the general thing. What we are asking is just that the exemptions that we seek are to allow the financial regulators to continue to exchange information, both within the country, because they do it with other regulators, and in this instance where we've been affected is with foreign regulators. And it's quite important to be able to share information with foreign regulators. It may be about personal people who have accounts, who might be doing money laundering, who might be posing a risk to the system. You need that kind of information between regulators. This happens all the time, And I think what we want to just ensure is that this bill allows that practice to continue. The problem that we have is that in some cases, as I said, especially in emerging economies, the regulators might not be very well capacitated. And so if you don't give them information, you've got to be careful that there's some minimum standards that they are going to be able to at least not break the law once we provide them information. But if we provide information on good faith basis, and generally when regulators act, if you act in good faith, they are protected from certain forms of liability, which we tend to do in our own acts that we have. And this, I guess, is, if you think broadly about it, is if you provide this info and they then abuse the info, what do you do? So what we're saying is, we look at 72, that one, you do it in good faith, but before you do it in good faith, you try and make sure they also stick to certain standards. And then if they still break good faith with you, you make sure that you take stronger measures thereafter, or you limit that kind of exchange of information. And as I said, because this is exchange between the regulators, so it's hardly ever a problem, because regulators tend to be regulating their own sector. They know that if they act recklessly, it won't give them information next time. Because the only reason regulators from different countries share information is because you have an institution that's operating in both countries normally. So it's in both your interests to make sure that you're regulating that entity effectively, because if something happens in that country, it could mean that there's bankruptcy in your country as well. So I think there's a lot of checks and balances, but we've got to legislate for those that, in spite of that, still abuse the system and find a way of dealing with it. So I would say that could deal with some of the issues. I'm not an expert on the protection of state information bill, which I know this House is looking through. But I wouldn't imagine it's a problem, because this is information in the hands of private parties largely that we're talking about. So it's how they handle personal information. But again, Hank and Ananda, I think, can answer that best. With regard to the first question, I think I've answered the issue of capacity, because it's in your interest if one of our banks goes to a country and their regulatory system is poor, that our regulators work with them to develop their capacity as well, because our bank is going to operate there. It's in our interest that that happens. So there's a lot of that kind of, hopefully, capacity building. I'm not saying there's enough. But to the extent there are weaknesses, you try and take that into account, and they tend to sign what they call a memorandum of understanding to say how they will exchange info, how they will deal with particular weaknesses or risks that might be identified at a regulatory level. I think internationally you do find there's a lot of weaknesses in these systems, because, to be honest, people exchange info even amongst regulators, but when you have a Lehman and the bank goes down, then when you have a crisis, people won't exchange information. It's like each country for themselves. So it's not a current solution. Even internationally, they're trying to put some sort of standards to make sure that you will share information no matter what the risks are at the time. I think with regard to the question on the Reserve Bank playing a macroprudential role, what that means is if you had one major bank, we've got four big banks, if one of them goes insolvent, because a lot of people, even that bank will have accounts with the other three banks, or there are customers who borrow from the one bank and have a deposit somewhere else. So if their deposit goes in one bank, they're not able to pay the other bank. You find very quickly the other three banks will also go insolvent. So what the Reserve Bank has to do is to make sure that, aside from making sure each institution is safe, they've got to make sure there aren't risks that, for example, if all of them take similar risks, like they all had subprime products in the United States, any of the banks, it hits all your banks when there's a crisis. So they take a lot of preventative measures to try and prevent that kind of meltdown that could happen. It's very hard to quantify, because these risks often can, you often don't see them, okay? But that's the kind of system-wide supervision that they do. They don't look at particular institutions, they look at the entire system and say, is it stable? Can anything shock it and make it unstable? How do you deal with those kinds of shocks? How can you minimize those risks? it's a very new area, by the way, which has developed, especially after 2008. I think I've answered most of it. I don't know if Hank or Ananda want to talk generally on the book here. Maybe they can provide the more general info.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm just going to be brief because I think you would like to turn to the submission by the National Treasury. But I think the main outstanding question at this stage, and that is something that we can try to quickly address or possibly provide you with further information again, but the difference between the protection of personal information and the protection of state information bill. The ambit of the protection of state information bill, as I understand it, is limited to records held by what is defined as public or governmental bodies. That goes to the heart of the classification of documentation or records held by the state. In other words, if a document in the possession of a government department is of such an extremely important nature that it may harm South Africa internationally if the information is released, then that document will in all likelihood be classified as secret. The classification of a document then has certain implications with who has access to that information and who may provide that information to someone else. The Protection of Personal Information Bill, Mr. Chair, is something totally different. The Protection of Personal Information Bill applies not only to public bodies, but also to private bodies. It introduces, in essence, 8 conditions for the lawful processing of personal information. Those conditions are universally recognized as principles or conditions of good practice in how responsible parties, in other words public and private bodies, must in general process and look after, collect and eventually destruct the personal information in their possession. So that doesn't have anything to do with the classification of information. The State Information Bill does provide for the classification of certain personal information that a public body has in its possession to be classified if that information, the disclosure thereof, may be harmful to the life of the person concerned. Hopefully I sort of gave you a bird's eye view of the difference between the two.
Any further engagement from our members? None. We note the presentation from Treasury and we'll consider it during our deliberations. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you.
This question out of this old phone. Congrats, your SIM number has 195,000 rand in Rika. In Rika, promo ticket number SH Y2. Call Miss Andiswa. So this man have won something.
Honourable members, can we have 20 minutes break and then we will continue.